Welcome to the Learning Reinvented podcast, brought to you by myself, James Politilo, and the team from The Learning Effect. There are lots of learning podcasts out there, so we wanted to do something slightly different. In this episode, we will be looking at how learning professionals can enhance their learning practice. To provide some insights and inspiration, I am delighted to welcome Lavinia Mehendinto to the podcast. Welcome, Lavinia.
Hi, James. Thank you so much for having me.
We really appreciate you joining us today. Do you want to introduce yourself to our listeners and tell them a little bit more about yourself?
Of course. So I am Lavinia. I am currently the co-founder and learning architect at Offbeat, which is a learning space for learning and development professionals. I joined the industry almost 10 years ago now, and I started in higher ed designing career development programs for students. And that's when I realized that learning can be different from what I knew in school. And I found my passion for learning and just helping others become better and perform better, I guess. And then a couple of years into this, I joined the corporate world, first as a learning and development consultant, then as a learning and development manager, and I was lucky enough to touch upon various things in the learning and development world. We were in a company that was based here where I live, so there was no global telling us what to do, which was a real benefit for my career, I would say. And then in 2020, I opened this newsletter called Offbeat, which grew very beautifully, I would say. And now, it got me to where I am today, where I'm designing learning for learning and development professionals, which is quite exciting.
I think that's quite a journey. So we first spoke, you know, sort of 3 years ago, and you were at the beginning of that Offbeat journey, and you've obviously, you know, taken lots of different turns and avenues across that 3 years and championing different approaches. And you also in your intro talked about sort of that difference between learning when you're at school and what learning can be. So given you've been on that journey through lots of different roles, let's kick off by talking about some of the skills maybe learning and development professionals should be developing, or what's changed in that space.
Yeah, I think when I started this journey, I had a very narrow understanding of what a learning and development professional should look like. I think I was mainly thinking about the technical skills. Like, okay, you should know how to design learning experiences. You should have good project management skills, good, I don't know, stakeholder management skills, and so on. So I was mainly thinking about that. And then after talking to, I think, hundreds of learning and development professionals by now, my understanding or my worldview is a bit broader, and I added two more categories to this one of technical skills. This is definitely still very, very important, but I think the other two kind of enhance that one. The first one is something that we're talking a lot about in L&D, but usually for others, we think about these so-called soft skills, or now power skills or future skills, and how we should bring them to our organizations. But I think the conversation about how can we bring them to us is just getting started. And when I think of these power skills, I'm thinking about, you know, creativity, critical thinking, strategic thinking, self-management, even some attributes like being courageous. You know, I think that's so, so important, knowing how to learn first ourselves before we go on and talk about that in our organizations. So that's one category. And the second one, which I find fascinating because I think there's a no stop to exploring this one, is just bringing new perspectives, new tools, frameworks from other disciplines. And here I could name a few, like systems thinking, like behavior change, neuroscience, marketing, community management. So all those disciplines have something that can help us become better in our roles and just have more impact.
I think that's really interesting. You start with that sort of technical space, which is very much focused on delivering something. So it's producing a product of some sort. And then you sort of flipped into those power skills or whatever else you called them, which is more about how you do some of that stuff and your impact and how you interact and how you think and, you know, touching into things like you talked about, how courageous you are. And I think that's around transformation. That's about organizational impact. That's about all sorts of different things. And then touching on that last category of what we can learn from elsewhere, because we don't sit in isolation in learning, and we shouldn't sit in isolation in the way we are approaching things. So that, you know, to me, that really resonates with me. It goes to everything from we are service providers and we should be providing the best level of service through to we are, you know, part of a whole system. So how do we put system thinking in? And all of those things, I think it's massively important that people start getting their heads around. So on that journey, how do you do that? You know, how do you go about sort of knowing what to learn, where to learn, how to take those things on and positioning yourselves? Because that could seem massively overwhelming if you're almost where you were at the start of that journey of going, I may be designing some learning or facilitating groups or running a cohort or something along those lines. How do we broaden out?
I think it all starts with curiosity, if you ask me. If you're just starting your journey, or if you're, you know, okay, I'm doing my job, but I feel there's something more that I can do. It all starts with curiosity. Let's see what's out there. And to be honest, some areas will resonate more than others in different stages of your career, you know, because at the beginning, you might not bother with learning about systems thinking because that's very complex. But as you progress in your journey, you know, being a learning and development manager, for example, that is responsible for writing an L&D strategy. I'm just thinking on the top of my head. You should know, just like you said, you know, whatever we're building, it's not in isolation. And there are so many factors that will affect positively or negatively whatever we want to do. And we should be aware of those. And we should, you know, it's change management. We should think of ways to overcome different challenges or to leverage different things that are happening very well in our organization. So, you know, I think that this would be my first idea. Just go with your curiosity. At least that's what I did. I talked to people, to various people. Right now, because we're in a podcast, we also have a podcast at Offbeat. And the main purpose of that podcast is to talk with people from different professions. We even went on to talking with chefs, to architects, just to see what can we learn from those professions. So just talking to people, then reading whatever it's out there without, I think at first is without a filter necessarily, you know, just, okay, if you have some time during the morning, you're drinking your coffee, let's see what's on LinkedIn, for example. For me, LinkedIn has been an amazing learning tool. So that as well. And then you will add, I think being self-aware is extremely important. Having that understanding of what I know, where do I operate as a learning and development professional? How's like my organization? What do they care about? And then what do I like? I think even that's very important. What out of everything that I find out there, what are the things that spark something in me? So I think with the curiosity layer and the self-awareness layer, you will kind of bridge a plan for yourself. You know, you will end up doing something very well, but also being aware of other things that are happening around you, if that makes sense.
It does. It makes perfect sense. And I really like that sort of, you know, you talked about curiosity, self-awareness. And the other thing you threw in there as well that I almost was trying to pack together, because that's how my head works, is putting models together. So like you've got resonance. So from curiosity, as your curiosity, things resonate with you, which then take you down a different path. And being, you know, we should constantly, in my view, be working to enhance our self-awareness. We live within a bubble and going to different experiences, speaking to different people. I love the fact you're talking about talking to chefs and architects, and I've always found moving industry in my career very purposefully has given me very different perspectives, not thinking of myself as a learning person. You know, I remember very early on in my career, I went to a face-to-face event. I can't even remember what the face-to-face event was now, but I remember someone being there and they were from a discipline that was completely different. And they had gone, and I was like, what are you doing here? And they were like, well, I can go to my same stuff in my industry and I just hear the same stuff. So mm-hmm. I like to go to different places. And that, I can't remember who they were, where they were from. All I remember is the message, because that just mm-hmm. made me go, that's a completely different way of thinking about things. And that curiosity, and that we can learn from other professions. And I love that whole scope. And it then comes back to me of, there is no cookie cutter or one size fits all mm-hmm. approach to either learning or to learning professionals. Because just because someone's a learning designer or an L&D manager, if they're following their curiosity, their resonance and their self-awareness, and then the context, because you talked about what's important to the business, we're all going to be doing something very different. So mm-hmm. I think that means it is very eclectic and very interesting. And having that confidence to be yourself and to find your mm-hmm. space is a really interesting, a great message that I think you're pushing.
Yeah. And actually, you mentioned something that made me remember another conversation that I had, which is, you know, we tend, as adults especially, we tend to attach identities to ourselves. You know, I am a woman, I am a learning and development professional, and that identity comes with something. Some things are positives, and some others is just there are boundaries. And this person I was talking to mentioned something about just changing your mindset, especially professionally. You're not a learning and development professional. You are trying to help others learn and become better. And suddenly, from, you know, what you attach to the learning and development profession, like we do training, we do this, we do this, when you think about, oh, I want to help these people learn and become better and perform and whatever, there's a broad set of tools that you can use. And that's when you, again, just follow your curiosity about what's out there.
And I think that's a really important point. It's something I've banged the drum for ages about, is think about what you're there to do. Mm-hmm. And if you're there to deliver training or learning, then in my view, you stop too early, because mm-hmm. it's, what's your impact? What are you trying to do broader than that? And as soon as you open those questions, it can be freeing, it can be scary, it can be challenging, but it gives you that scope to go and be curious, creative, try, fail, innovate, test mm-hmm. and learn, which is a great mm-hmm. space to be. Mm-hmm. However, not everyone's in that space. So mm-hmm. again, you know, how can people sort of tap into and slowly start to take those steps of, you know, I'm on that journey, they're starting to be curious. How do they, you know, tap in and do some of those things that are probably coming very naturally to you now, having done it for, you know, getting on for 10 years?
Yeah, well, I don't think I'm going to say anything differently. Again, I think it depends a lot on the organization you're in, and you have to be very good at also listening to your context and understanding how people talk and what they talk about and all that. So I think, again, that combined with everything that I mentioned previously, I think it will lead you down a path. And, you know, what I noticed is that we sometimes get scared of what we find out there. Like it seems too much. It's, oh my God, this is so complex. But on the other hand, there's the saying that just trust the process. Just trust the process, because at some point you will get to an understanding of the different things that you're exploring. You just need to put yourself out there and to, yeah, just constantly be there, constantly talk to different managers from your organization. And this is just an example, but don't talk to them about how are your people doing, whatever. Don't talk about that. Talk about whatever they're building. You know, what are you doing this week? What are you struggling with? Who are you working with? Just trying to kind of design, as an architect would do, the map of your organization. And at first, you know, whenever we just go out there and explore something new, especially if it's very complex, we are going to feel overwhelmed. But if you stick with it, at some point, there's gonna be some connections made in your brain.
I think that's really interesting, you know, going out and like understanding the architecture of your business. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to influence and change things, you know, that understanding how your business believes it works, how it really works, mm-hmm. all of those things, you know, you're almost into social engineering and mm-hmm. org culture and all sorts of different places, which are, I find, massively interesting. I know other people will be like, oh no, that's not for me. But on that journey you've been through, I know there's certain things that resonate with you and you feel mm-hmm. really passionate about, and we've talked about some of those before the podcast, so we can try and structure this conversation somehow, because I know we could go off in all sorts of directions. So one of those is, you sort of explored, is social learning. Do you want to give me a bit more of insights into social learning and your views and what you've learned and experiences, etc.?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. So for me, social learning is constantly happening. You know, no matter if you're there or not as a learning and development professional, it will happen. The question is, how can you enhance that? How can you reward the knowledge exchange that's happening, the support, the support that people give to each other? Can you do something to increase psychological safety? I think so. It's very important for social learning to be happening, for people to feel safe, for them not to feel that if I open my mouth and ask a question or share something, someone is going to judge me. You know, that's so, so important. Can you do something to enhance that? So psychological safety is one thing that I would mention. And then it's just, there are so many tools that you can use to make sure that social learning is happening in a way that provides impact. You know, whether if it's thinking about communities of practice, how can you nurture those? Whether if it's, you know, mentoring programs, reverse mentoring programs. I want to highlight that everyone can, you know, has a new perspective, and people can learn from each other no matter their seniority. So mentoring, reverse mentoring, just peer learning. Again, peer learning is happening. I remember I have a very specific use case where in my previous organization, I was asked to design a body program for the onboarding of new sales colleagues. And when I went into like my first, now as I grew older, my first instinct is to go see what's happening in reality. So I went and talked to some of my colleagues, and what I discovered is that peer learning is already happening. So by default, the organic thing that was happening is that a new employee, a new sales professional would come in, and someone, a more tenured colleague, would kind of take him or her under their wing and would take care of them. And my question was like, what more can I do to make sure that that will keep on happening and that it's just very, very impactful? And to be honest, there wasn't much apart from rewarding the behavior in different ways. It doesn't always need to be money or products or just acknowledgement. It goes a long way, I would say. But the structure itself was there. People were doing it. something that I'm going in all sorts of directions, but when it comes to social learning, something that I've noticed LNDs doing is that they are trying to artificially create social learning. And my message would be, don't do that. Just go and see where that happens and, you know, take those behaviors and amplify them. Because if you amplify those behaviors, if you talk about them and about how healthy they are and about how much good they did to people, others, because we're social beings, others will come and gravitate around those, you know, those centers of social learning, let's call them. So, yeah, I think these are the three thoughts that I have like on the top of my head. Psychological safety is extremely important. And I'm not talking about, because that's another conversation, I'm not talking about psychological safety in the training room. It's not about that. No, it's about psychological safety in the organization. That influences whether or not learning happens. The psychological safety, then there are all sorts of tools that you can use, but don't forget that social learning is happening and don't try to push people into it, because yeah, most of the times and most of the cases that I've seen have failed.
I think that's a really good message, that far too often in learning we try to push against the organizational culture, all the inbuilt social systems, the inbuilt reward mechanisms, the management mm-hmm. structures. And you can go in and look and think, right, the whole organization is heading this way, and suddenly you're trying to go across it or even mm-hmm. in the other direction. And if you step back and take, you know, learn from other disciplines, if you're a startup company mm-hmm. and going in and taking your product to market and thinking, right, you're going to have to create a new segment here, a new category of product mm-hmm. that no one understands. You're going to have to go in, get market traction, change mm-hmm. people from their own old behaviors, stop them doing what they're doing now and move to your product and tool. You'd go, that's insanity. That's going to, you, have you got $1 billion, you know, backer who's going to back your marketing, who's going to, you know, are you backed by the biggest VCs in the world? And mm-hmm. that would be your advice to someone trying to do that with a mm-hmm. product. But I see day in, day out, learning teams trying to do that. They're almost trying to go in as these renegade launch products against their organizational culture. And mm-hmm. it's just like, you are going to bounce off. Yeah, and it's just, you know, to your mm-hmm. point, enhance what's there, amplify what's there, don't go against what you're trying to do. And so often we set ourselves up for failure from that initial point.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's something else that when I hear you talk, something else came to mind, which is we expect, and I'm not saying it's our fault, sometimes it's just the pressure that we have from other stakeholders, is that we expect things to be happening very quickly. You know, I put something out there and then overnight people will be super excited about it, will be aware about it. Let's start, we'll be aware about it. That's the first stage, you know, and that's not realistic. And I think, you know, it's a process. Whatever learning product you're building or whatever you're trying to model as a behavior in your organization, we should not forget that's a process, you know, and small initiatives will compound at some point, but we need to, yeah. And also, because I was talking about courage at the beginning of the episode, we need to find the courage to push against short-term initiatives. And I, you know, at the beginning, I was very much against training, workshops, 2 days, workshops, whatever. And now I'm not saying they are not useful, but what I'm saying is that they should be a part of a larger system, of a larger learning experience. If you want people to do something, you know, even we need to go back to learning principles, right? Okay, even if you do training or workshops, you need to think in chunks and you need to give people the space to practice. So and reflect and make sense of whatever they're learning for themselves. So going back to my initial point is that we need to realize and we need to be courageous enough to push this message into our organizations that if we want to see change, whether if it's, you know, behavior change, skill acquisitions, just habits, new habits, that's a long-term process. And you will need to think of long-term plans to support the acquisition of those skills, behaviors, whatever.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, really important that it's part of that bigger system and learning from other professions or other functions. If you take something like public health, you wouldn't turn around overnight and say, we are going to stop everyone in this country eating junk food and we're going to do it through a training course. Mm-hmm. You know, you would just get, people would laugh you out of, you know, it becomes part of legislation, it becomes part of engaging with the manufacturers of products. You know, it's a multifaceted approach to things, and yet we seem to sometimes think behavioral change can be fixed by a two-day workshop or by pushing in a social learning platform, and we've got to look at it more holistically than that to have the impact we really want to.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and it's also, I've been talking a lot about this, how everyone should understand a bit of behavior change, a bit of neuroscience, not just us in L&D. I think literally everyone should know how their brain works, because as we grow awareness about these things, people will realize and our stakeholders will realize the solutions they're asking for are just not, because they are asking for solutions, they're coming to us with solutions, usually not with problems, will not be effective long term. And it's hard, but just talking about it more, just growing awareness about the importance of this knowledge, this piece of knowledge, which unfortunately, or at least our generation, and I say our generation, not Gen Zs, but millennials and everyone else, we didn't get a chance to explore that, I think, as early as we should have. Like, I think these conversations should be a part of, you know, a child's education and an adolescent's education. I'm seeing a shift there, but it's still not enough, if you ask me. There's still more push to be done. And since we're still handling, and our audience is still, I would say, the majority of the workforce, and I am not statistically researched here, but I think we are millennials, you know, and Gen Z is coming, but we're still millennials. We still need to talk about that a lot.
Absolutely. And one of the things you talked about earlier was that reflection and practice and opportunities to do that. And if I go back, I think there used to be more of that, and we've lost it along some of the way. You know, we've gone from classroom delivery of lecture style learning to online learning, which predominantly in its infancy and for still a lot of people is lecture style content consumption. Mm-hmm. So with your experience and the things, you know, the people you've met, the stuff you've done yourself, the people you've worked with, can you share some sort of great examples or tools of tips for getting reflection and practice back into learning? Because it feels like many people have lost that along the way.
Mm-hmm. I love reflection. I really love this subject. What I think is that, you know, everything impacts everything in this world. And I think that the way we have lived, we tend to live is, you know, we are asked to move very quickly, to deliver very quickly. We, as adults, we have so many things on our plate. And that reflection bit, you know, just sitting with yourself or just, you know, going to therapy, having a coach, having a conversation that's a bit deeper with a friend or whatever, it doesn't always seem efficient. Like, it seems sometimes maybe lost time. Oh my God, I'm sitting here with my thoughts. But truth be told, reflection is the way that you're going to make sense of whatever has been happening to you to move forward better. And there are so many types of reflection. When I first started talking about this, again, I had a very narrow understanding of reflection, and I was only thinking about, okay, again, I'm sitting with my journal and I'm writing. But as I started exploring more, I realized that there are, you know, there's, just to give you an example, you can reflect while something is happening, you know, that metacognition beat, just having the awareness of, okay, I'm providing feedback to someone in my team, and I'm also aware of the way that my emotions are happening in my body, you know. So there's this piece of reflection when something is happening, and there's the piece of reflection after something has happened. You know, I went through something, I went through a training, I went through a workshop, and now I'm sitting here and I'm trying to understand how to apply at least one thing that I have learned from the workshop and from the training. And this leads me to what we can do as learning experience designers, learning and development professionals, is to not forget to insert these reflection moments into our learning experiences. Just to give you an example, it was so nice to see this coming from our community. So within Offbeat, within our community, we have weekly events of all sorts. And at some point, multiple people suggested that we should have space dedicated for reflection at the end of each event. And we started doing that. We just give 10 minutes. We do reflection in groups usually. And the question is always, what are you taking with you that you're planning to apply? So just giving them that time to reflect in pairs, and then we're bringing them together to share even more, you know? So it's such a small thing, but if we always run and try to put in content, a lot of content, it just doesn't make sense to people. It's just too much. The content is out there already. People just need to make sense of it for their own context. So yeah, I would say, especially for this role of learning experience design and for whomever has this responsibility, you should by default think of how you can embed those reflection moments into your design.
I think, you know, it's really important you mentioned that it sometimes feels like wasted time or lost time. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we're almost programmed in the way that we operate in life to be thinking to respond, to be mm-hmm. thinking to act. If mm-hmm. we're not doing something, if we're not busy, you know, it's that justification of I need to be doing something with every minute of my day, relaxing, switching off, you know, everything becomes, I've got to fill my time mm-hmm. with something that I can justify, or I can document, or I can photograph and put on Instagram, whatever it happens, you know, it feels mm-hmm. like people are yeah. constantly just filling time with activity, and that slowing down is not necessarily part of what we do naturally anymore.
No, it's not. And it's very hard, to be honest. I've been through this journey myself in the past 6 months. I came from a place of burnout at the end of last year. And I just realized it's not sustainable anymore, and that I need to do something else than work 16 hours a day, you know. And I could see myself feeling guilty most of the time for taking time off, feeling ashamed for saying in the wider community that I'm taking time off. But then, you know, rationally, I knew that if I would go with the pressure and the workload that I had assignment by, it couldn't lead to anything good. And I saw myself in the, I would say, past 3 months, kind of, I saw a rebirth of who Lavinia was before that time when I just couldn't think anymore. I just couldn't, yeah, process information and so on. So I think, you know, those small reflection moments and those habits of self-care, they are so important. And this leads me to, and I promise I'm going to be very short about this, but when it comes to learning, we should be aware of all the things that impact the ability of people to learn, to change, to, you know, perform and so on. And again, when I started doing this, I had a very narrow understanding, or at least I wasn't even not curious, but I didn't think about this way. And then listening, I have to say, listening to the Huberman Lab, I think just I totally recommend this podcast to everyone, just broaden my horizons about all the things that affect the way you are, you know, your nutrition, doing exercise, drinking water, the stress that you have in your personal life, your relationships in your personal and professional life. So there are so many things that are happening in the universe of an individual, and we need to have the empathy to build our learning experiences with this in mind. And this doesn't mean throwing content at people. This doesn't mean putting pressure on people to learn and to perform and so on. So it comes with, I think, an ingredient of slowness, which is positive, not how we, you know, how at least I thought about it in a negative way.
I think that's, you know, absolutely key. We never know what's going on in someone else's life, really. We never know really what's going on in someone else's head, in their emotions, mm-hmm. in the challenges they face, the priorities, how they see the world. And that empathy without, again, empathizing to respond or mm-hmm. trying to just go, oh, yeah, I understand. Mm-hmm. You know, it's really just taking that time to not judge, but mm-hmm. be there and create space and lots of different things. You know, you've talked about so many different things across the podcast. And, you know, again, thinking about why people don't learn or why people don't change and why people don't slow down to create the time to speed up. And I think that's a common challenge that I've certainly seen throughout my career. You know, you see people, you go in with a new perspective and you see, why are you doing that? You know, you're very inefficient, or you've not learned, or you're not implementing new ways of working, or you're hitting the same challenge, or, you know, you've got a customer contact center where thousands of people are calling up with the same complaint. And I'm like, why doesn't someone just fix the core issue? And mm-hmm. I think sometimes we just get caught in whatever world we're in, just in the busyness of what we're doing, and that ability to step back to, and sometimes you need help, whether that's a coach mm-hmm. or a mentor or just someone, you know, mm-hmm. to your point about, you know, your podcast of speak to a chef, speak to an architect, get mm-hmm. them to come in and look at what you're doing. They might just go, why are you doing that? How can you help? You know, so there's so many mm-hmm. different ways of slowing down or removing yourself from the busyness of your life, your situation. Mm-hmm. And I think those are sometimes, you know, just be really creative in those spaces as well, just as to how you can slow down, because we don't do it enough and we just end up, like you said, on that wheel. And so many of us are just heading towards burnout or heading towards that space of, oh, I'm completely run down. I've got my mm-hmm. week off, mm-hmm. my weekend or my 2 week holiday, and we come out and then a week and a half later, we're burnt out again. So, you know, there's some real key messages that you've given around taking that time to reset yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think to take something that's been happening in the world, actually, I think it boils down to sustainable growth, whether it is for organizations or for individuals. You know, we've seen what a fast-paced startup environment can do, you know, VCs pushing startups to grow very, very quickly. In the end, the market imploded, right? So I think, to bring it back to our world, it's the same with individuals. If you push yourselves to perform one, you know, the top of your level, 100% of the time, working super long hours, I at least I don't believe it's sustainable. Of course, it depends for each individual, and I'm not, because I've gone through that as well, and I've seen others go through that as well. Oh, why are you working so much? Why are you, you know, having those questions? And I don't believe that's a good approach either. Like, I just think we are different. We should just embrace that in all the senses possible. But again, don't not forget about a bit of time for us and for our brain, and just give ourselves a bit of love from time to time.
Absolutely. And you've shared so much of your sort of story and various different things, so I want to look forward a little bit now. So what comes next for you?
That's such a nice question. Well, we are gonna try and grow Offbeat, I guess. I have been alone in the past 3 years, with only my co-founder being part-time. Now she's full-time, so I am building a small team around this product that I love so much, and around this problem that I love so much of us in L&D lacking some skills. And yeah, we are just partnering with so many people in all sorts of ways to, yeah, just help each other grow, which I think it's quite wonderful. There's so many things that we have planned for this year. I would just ask people to stick around and follow us to see what will happen.
So if people do want to stick around and be part of that journey and follow the story or be part of that story, what's the best way of them doing that?
So I'm very active on LinkedIn. So if you can share my LinkedIn profile with people, I'm more than happy. I try and reply as quickly as possible to everyone who sends a message. If I don't always get to that, I'm so sorry, but I do try. And over email, I'm also very, very active. And you can get my email if you subscribe to the newsletter, I think. That's the way so the LinkedIn and the newsletter, the Offbeat newsletter, are the two ways to see how I'm thinking about this industry, about myself, about my journey, and so on.
So we'll make sure that we share those contact details in the show notes below the podcast. And I'd really like to thank you for joining us today. I know we could have gone on and talked about a lot more subjects, but if we sort of draw a line there, and I'm sure we can have another episode in the future where we delve down into some other areas of the stuff you're focusing on as well.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you for having me. And I'm happy to talk about this with everyone who wants to listen.
An absolute pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Learning Reinvented podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. If you've not already done so, please follow our podcast. And if the Learning Effect can help you and your organisation, please do get in touch. You can find both James and Katie on LinkedIn, and our contact details are in the show notes below.